night. 107 McMonagle here with you. Don't let the music fool you. We're going to have a lot of fun here. As we're watching, me and Rami are watching, I guess they're replaying. Yesterday, July 1st, was one, I forgot to mention yesterday, one, the anniversary of the station. As WFAN yesterday turned 34 years old, which is crazy. Right, is that right? I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was 37.
2024, 7 and 7. 7 and 4. Yes. 37 years old. And I was here, my first year of working at the station was the 20th anniversary. So that's how I know I've been here 17 years. Crazy. But yeah, the 37th anniversary of WFAN. And then, of course, it was also the anniversary, the 20th anniversary of the Jeter Into the Stands game, which they're replaying now. And it's one of the great, it's really one of the great games ever. It's even got more things in it than I remember. One that I do remember, it was kind of the end of, I'm blanking on his name. The shortstop for the Yankees, the shortstop for the Red Sox.
Garcia Parra.
Garcia Parra, thank you. It was the end of Garcia Parra. He was like in the dugout, miserable. They ended up obviously moving him for Orlando Cabrera, and we know what happened that year, 2004. So that stands out to me watching it, knowing that it was the end of the Garcia Parra era in Boston when it was him, Rodriguez, and Jeter were the three great shortstops in baseball. Who's better? Like Willie Mick and the Duke, right? Who's the best shortstop? And then I don't remember that. I remember the play, I guess it's because it's part of this game, but the play where Alex makes the play down the line and makes the great throw home to get the runner at the plate, and he avoids hitting him in the back, throwing it somehow around him. I forgot that that was part of this game too. There were so many great plays in this game. Obviously, my guy, who I loved, Cairo. I loved Miguel Cairo. He was by far my favorite of the, like, Luis Soho, Miguel Cairo, Ronald Torres, like all those guys who were great role players, backup infielders. I loved Miguel Cairo. Loved him. And he comes through with the big hit that ties the game. Flaherty wins the game. Obviously, just one of the great regular season games. Never mind the fact that, you know, Judge goes into the, the captain, Derek Jeter, goes into the stands. And we were just talking about Gary Sheffield and his at bat and his batting stance. I mean, and this one, we were just watching at bat. He would you know, wiggle that bat. He literally brought it all the way down where it was pointing at the pitcher. I mean, he had some wiggle. And I was reading Andy Martino's book, The Cashman Years. And it's kind of been said before, but Brian Cashman and the Boss really fought about Gary Sheffield. Brian Cashman was already down the road and pretty much had a contract with Vladimir Guerrero to bring Vladimir Guerrero to the Yankees. And the Boss put a kibosh on it and said, we're getting Gary Sheffield instead. So for those of you who hate Brian, at least he's got one there. Gary Sheffield was actually a pretty damn good Yankee, but he wasn't Vladimir Guerrero. The Yankees would have been better served. Vladimir Guerrero obviously won a MVP that year with the Angels, and Cashman wanted Vladimir Guerrero. And I guess that's partially why Vlad Jr. doesn't want to play for the Yankees, because Vlad Sr. was probably pissed off that they were all the way down the road with a contract, because I think in the book it says they had agreed almost, like they were pretty much right there. And the Boss came in and said, no, I want Gary Sheffield instead. So maybe that's why Vladdy Jr. said he never wanted to play for the New York Yankees. But Bubba Crosby's up. Oh, yeah, the great Bubba Crosby. What a time to be alive. 888-808-1019, the 2004 New York Yankees-Boston Red Sox rivalry. It doesn't end well. 888-808-1019. So we were talking about Hartenstein there. And obviously, disappointing that he left. You could see the, I mean, I don't know if we ever thought he would bring him back. Like, Ananobi, it felt like, okay, listen, they're going to make sure they bring back Ananobi. Once Harden, once the rumor mill was running around that Hardenstein was going to get this contract, I don't think anyone expected him to be back. Now, someone's hit me up on Twitter, and Rob, who is a good follow, who's a good fan, he's constantly sending me stuff on Twitter. I don't think that Sims was the backup center either. Like, I don't think Sims was. Like, they might have played him as the starter for a few minutes, as Rami said, just to keep continuity with the bench, but Hardenstein was getting most of the playing time, and I think Jericho Sims, everybody knew what his role on the team was. It was not to come in and play for Mitchell Robinson. So Hardenstein immediately came in. I think he got 19 rebounds the first game he played for Mitch Robinson. He is a extremely important piece, and I do think that he would work great inside this offense. His ability to pass, all the shooters they have, play the inside-out game, his offensive little push shot, his ability to rebound. Now, he's not the same defender that Mitch Robinson is. And, you know, they could listen, Mitchell Robinson will prove effective, too. I think Mitchell Robinson's getting a bad rap here, because you can't say nice things about Hardenstein without sort of putting Mitch Robinson down. And I don't think it's fair. Mitchell Robinson is what he is. He's an excellent defender, which now, I mean, you take on the 76ers, you want to make sure you have someone to the play and beat as well as now Maxey and Paul George. But he's a really good defender, and he was having a great year before he got hurt, a great year. And he turned around a playoff game with his defense. He's a legitimately valuable guy to have. Now, he can't hit foul shots. He doesn't really pass. The only shots he hits are alley-oops. Like, I get it. He's limited offensively, no doubt, and I would rather have Hartenstein. But it is what it is. And to automatically say, like, this somehow is a death blow to this Knicks team, I just find that a bit much. I mean, they found him. I trust Leon Rose and Tibbs to go get another guy they can convert in some way into a facsimile of Hartenstein. Like, I don't know who it is yet. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know where they're going to target it. I don't know how they're going to figure it out. But this is a brand new team that's going to play slightly different. Nothing's ever the same. I know they're bringing back a lot of the same guys, but it won't be exactly the same team. And yes, it's a loss. And yes, it's disappointing. You feel good for them. It was never going to happen. Like, I'm surprised that the news and the reaction from it was what it was, because I felt like, once you heard he was going to get the contract he was going to get, once really Ananobi was going to get a max contract somewhere else, and once you heard the numbers that Hartenstein was going to get, they were going to have to pick one. I mean, unless you got, and then especially once you get the Bridges trade, like, it was never going to happen. So I wish him well. I wish he could come back. I think he's going to do really well with the Thunder, and I don't know. You know, whether I know they were arguing whether or not this makes the Thunder, you know, more suited for a championship than the Knicks. That's just fighting with Marash and Lugie. I don't really care. I care about the Knicks. And this hurts the Knicks, no doubt. He was imperative for them. He played great for them. And now I am concerned. My major concern about it, even though he dealt with a Achilles injury, you know, or just a sore Achilles the entire, you know, really playoff run himself, the idea that you have OG Anunoby and you have Mitch Robinson as two of your five starters scare me. There is no doubt that both of those gentlemen are injury prone, and both of those, the idea that they're going to rely so heavily on the two of them scare me, because they're going to miss time. I think they're both, certainly Mitch, he's going to miss time. And there's nothing worse than a big man with feet injuries too. That's just, that's a tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme. Big men in their feet. It kind of rhymes. Big men in their feet. Song as old as time. No. Yeah. Song as old as rhyme. Big men in their feet. Beauty and the Beast. I think it works. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So yes, Hardenstein is gone. It sucks for the Knicks, but by no means is it a death knell. By no means do I think now they can't compete with the teams that are improving themselves like the Sixers and obviously Boston defending champs. I don't think this eliminates them. I think this is a unfortunate. You can't keep everybody. Like, this is just the nature of professional sports. Eric in Rivervale, what's up, Eric?
Hey, Mac, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. These 1 a.m. calls are hysterical. I mean, we got, you know, douches on WFAN.
Yeah.
We got weenies. I mean, I was waiting for your Killing Me Smalls in the L7
weenie. Yeah, I know.
Weenie.
It felt like that. I know. L7 weenie.
Too funny, man. But yep. I wanted to talk a little Yanks with you. I know we
sure.
talked a little bit last week, but now that we're getting, anxiously close here to the trade deadline and, well, the Yanks are showing a little bit of life here and hopefully righting the ship. But it seems to me, I mean, obviously pitching in the bullpen is always something that Cashman's going to target. But I don't worry so much there. I mean, obviously I would love a Tanner Scott, but it sounds like he's likely the hottest commodity that's really going to be traded outside of the other guy, that flamethrower out of
Chicago.
Oakland.
Oh, no.
Oh, Chicago, too. But, I don't think Oakland's going to move that cat. What's his name?
Mason Miller. I don't know. I'm not so sure they're going to be totally honest with you. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, you're talking about a flamethrowing reliever who is not. I mean, if they're going to move him, why even form a baseball team? Like, honestly. Like, why have a baseball team if you're going to trade and plus, if you are, say you are. Do you know the package you're going to have to want back to do that? Like,
he's what, 25, I think? He's still controllable for at least 2 years.
I think it's more than that. I think it's more than 2 years. I think he's controllable for 3 or 4 years. I mean.
Yeah, that's nuts. But the A's are the A's. I mean, they're capable of doing anything.
Yeah,
so,
I mean.
You know,
they want to take one piece and get a ton back for him. I get that on some level, but who knows if any of what you get back comes close to this guy who's already closing games for you and being a dominant reliever. It is what it is. But say, let's just say for argument's sake, yeah, okay, he's one, Scott's one, Kopech out of Chicago's one. Others will emerge, and it doesn't have to be guys like that. And especially with the New York Yankees, I trust, although this year it hasn't been as pronounced as it has been in other years, I trust Matt Blake to get relievers in here and give them their best seasons of their careers. That's typically what's happened here with Matt Blake and the New York Yankees.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So that part of it isn't as much, I don't think, a quandary for me or a question mark.
No, I don't think it's just a matter of who. You got Efros coming back, and they're going to trade. I haven't heard anything about Trevino, the relief pitcher, and whether he's close to coming back. But Efros is coming back. And they're going to go trade for a reliever, maybe two. There's no doubt. So there's really nothing to discuss other than who's going to be the guy. That's it.
Right. And now the question for me, the bigger question is the infield, right? What are we doing in the infield? Is it Ryan McMahon? I would love that.
Yep.
I've heard actually a couple of rumors, and I know these are rumors, but I mean, going after Bregman would be, I mean, a half season rental. Yes. But
yes.
I mean, why the heck not? And if they're entertaining it, that would be interesting to me. And then I also heard that they've been listening to trade offers for Nasty Nestor, which surprises me. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but I've heard, you know, it's been happening for a couple of weeks now. They've been entertaining thoughts of trade offers for him.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard the rumor. I haven't really heard that. I heard it earlier in the year, like at the start of the year, that could be a possibility, but I haven't heard it any noise recently. Like I heard, if the rotation, if Nestor looks like he did last year, either transitioning to the bullpen or they could look to move him, I suppose. I haven't heard it recently.
Yeah, I love him in the bullpen.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, they don't have any lefties. I could see him transitioning to the bullpen on some level. He throws a lot of pitches, which typically isn't reliever. I mean, he's more of a starter. True. He's been a starter, but I could see him as a lefty, especially because they don't have any. Although he's not, a guy who's dominant against left-handed pitching. I don't view him as that kind of lefty. But yeah, no, I don't think. Who's the other? What was the other rumor you said? Oh, Bregman. Yeah, Bregman. First off, they are now the hottest team in baseball, and they have thrusted themselves back into it. And they don't. I doubt very much they would give up Bregman. They needed the Yankees to. They needed the Astros to just fall apart. Now, also, he's having the worst year of his career by far. He's awful right now. Maybe that's because he's so unused to not playing on a team that's winning that he's just, it's foreign to him and he's struggling with it. But it's a definite fit. And it was someone who I wouldn't be surprised in free agency next year is someone the Yankees target. No doubt. They need a third baseman, especially if DJ LeMahieu continues to show what he's shown so far. So
yeah, it's funny. As a Yankees fan, I hate the guy, but I would love to have him.
Oh, of course. It's one of those things. Yeah, of course. Same thing with Vladimir Guerrero. At the beginning of the year when he did this, you know, I don't know if it was last year or this year, but he talked about hating the Yankees and he never would play for them. He loves beating them too much.
Yeah, he would never wear the pinstripe.
Yeah, he decided to become the villain, and I treated him as such. I'm like, all right, let's go. You're the bad guy now. We hate Vladimir Guerrero. If I woke up to the news tomorrow they traded for Vladimir Guerrero, I would be the happiest. I'd be like, great. He's particularly hot right now. Let's go. Let's go.
Well, he's another one, right? But what would it take to get a Guerrero? I mean, I know the Blue Jays are terrible, but, I mean, he's the only commodity they have. So, like, why the heck would they trade him? And I would imagine it would cost us almost every prospect, I would have to figure.
Yeah, I mean.
And, like, who is that? Is that who are the prospects that we'd be losing? Is it Herrera? Is it Peraza? I mean, are those the guys that are going to be shipped, you would think? In most of these trades?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether the Blue Jays would trade. I'm sorry, I'm watching Alex Rodriguez think he got a triple play, which is that moment in the game where he makes that great play and he thinks it's a triple play, and then it dawns on him, no, the runner was out when you can't tag him and force him out. Anyway, so you're talking about, would they trade Vladimir Guerrero?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would. I think if they deem it, you got to understand. Look at how the Blue Jays played this. They were all in on the year. They tried to go out and get Ohtani, so they were willing to spend close to $700 million. Rumors are they were willing to give him the same contract the Dodgers gave him. So I mean, it's crazy. So they're willing to go out and get Ohtani. They believe in this team, and now they've fallen flat on their face. And they've already traded Biggio away, and not that he was a major piece. Not like a. You know, it's not the same as trading Vladimir or trading the shortstop. But I could see it if this team continues to flounder, where they go, look, we tried. We were willing to go spend a bunch of money. I don't know if this team's now worth it. Let's just break it down. We're playing in a division right now that has the young, talented Baltimore Orioles plus the Yankees. Like, we weren't able to get the free agent when we wanted to give him $700 million. Like, maybe we could trade a Vladimir Guerrero who has another year of control and another year of arbitration. He might get a haul. I mean, you might be able to get a haul. Bichette probably gets you a haul. I mean, you could get a lot of players and reshape your entire organization, take a couple of years down and try and build in the same way that Baltimore is built here. And right now, they look like the best team in the American League, arguably, you know, them, Yankees, and Cleveland. So I think it's possible. I don't know if it's likely, but I think it's possible. I do think it's possible.
And that's the interesting challenge that Cashman's going to have here is that, I mean, you can't do it all, right? I mean, we obviously have so many needs. And like, is a McMahon and, you know, a Guerrero?
Yeah.
Or even a Bregman or whatever. Are any of those even realistic? I mean, I think to get one would be amazing, and then you add a pitcher like a Tanner Scott.
Right.
But I just don't know how you do it all.
Yeah, I'd have to look at how many years. Now, here's the question. I mean, here's the question. Are you willing to trade Spencer Jones for one of them? I mean, that's the question, because Spencer Jones is the guy. Yep. Right? So now, how many years Ryan McMahon has control? I know Vladimir, it's this year and next year. I don't know if they would want to, even for one extra year of Vladimir, you'd probably have to give him Spencer Jones, but...
Yep. I think McMahon is three.
Let me see. He's under control until... Did he sign a new contract?
Maybe he didn't then.
Yeah,
maybe I have it wrong.
Yeah, McMahon signed through 2028. What's McMahon's contract?
McMahon signed through 2027. He signed a 6-year, $70 million contract.
Right, right, okay.
So $16 million a year.
He's making $16 million a year for 25, 26, 27. So he's got three and a half years. And right now he's hitting 270. He's got an OPS of 811. He's got 14 home runs and 42 RBIs playing on that miserable team. That's a player, if you want him, you got to give up Spencer Jones.
You think so, huh?
I for 3 years of control,
Peraza or not? Yeah,
Yeah, no, I don't know if Peraza's hitting 190 or something in the minor leagues now. I just, his value has been depreciated. There's no just two ways around it. I don't think, and Everson Pereira's hurt. He's on the, he's not going to play again this year. I mean, they have some pitching prospects. They still have some depth in the organization. You never know who they throw out at you. It just sounds like to me, Colorado doesn't want to do it. And so if you're going to get him, it's going to take a lot. Jonathan, Rami tells me, Jonathan India is, can you play him? He's a second baseman. I guess you could play him at, is he playing any third or first?
I just looked. He's only playing second, but yeah. You think Glaber, who played on the left side, you couldn't move him to third?
Maybe.
Theoretically, him and DJ split third.
You could, but the last time they tried to move him off second, it was a disaster. I know shortstop's different than third base, but I don't want to move him from second. No, I don't want to put that on his plate right now if I'm trying to get him going offensively. No. Maybe to start the year, the rest of his career, could he play third base? Sure, but not this year. I'm not going to shift him around. I just don't trust Glaber to handle it, quite honestly. And, you know, India's having a nice year, right? And India's been hot. He was just player of the week, but he's had, you know, the last couple of years have been down for him, but yeah, I mean, that's the kind of, I don't think you'd have to give a Spencer Jones for India. Definitely not. That you wouldn't have to do. But those are the kind of moves. You're going to get guys like Jonathan India playing fairly well this year, but has had a great rookie season and then had two down years, and now he's kind of playing well again. Younger players or, you know, players with ability but not superstar ability, because it's tough to get those impact players, which is what I would want. I know Evan feels differently. I want the impact player. I want the Vladimir Guerrero. I want the Ryan McMahon. I want an impact reliever. I don't want to just get a couple of guys I hope will work. Like I understand that's happened and helped before, but that's not what I'm looking for. I would want the impact player and hope that I would trade for Vladimir Guerrero and hope that he was just a beast in the postseason. Like I just got to hope that. I got to hope he turns it on. As opposed to, and that's the other thing, and I've talked about this too, the thing with the bullpen and the Yankees and the trade deadline is I'm looking for impact players, as I just said. And I think Brian Cashman is too. So if you get to the trade deadline and everybody and their mother is looking for relievers and maybe the starting rotation, while Baltimore will certainly be looking for starting pitchers. But if there is an impact player to be had at the starting rotation, maybe then if you want to get that player, get him, and then feel more comfortable transitioning Luis Gil to a bullpen spot or transitioning Nestor Cortez to a bullpen spot and helping your bullpen that way by acquiring starting pitching at the top end of the rotation and moving the other starters into the bullpen as opposed to just getting relievers, I could see that too. So it'll be, where do you get the biggest impact? Because if I can get a top-level starter, if I can get someone who I can put right behind Cole and feel good about it, well, now I'm willing to move Luis Gil to the back end of the bullpen. And I think that could help dramatically. I think Luis Gil could be a great reliever. I'd have to see it for a little bit before I'd feel great about it, but this is what they have to do. They have to get creative because you need impact players. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll come back, continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan. I wasn't sure who this was. Good old Dave. 135, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. A lot of Knicks fans are really up in arms about Hartenstein. I get it. I do. I'm disappointed. Like, I got buddies now who are, you know, can't sleep texting me about Hartenstein. Like, I understand how important he was. I do. And I understand, you know, but... It's just not something I deem they can't work around. I mean, Mitch Robinson's a good player. It'll be a different style, but they've added offensive weapons. They're going to have OG Anunoby the entire season. Like, if you think defensively, they could be really, really good. defensively, they could be really, really good. Like, I think Mitch Robinson's not getting quite enough credit. I don't love him as a player either, and I'd rather have Hartenstein, but let's not act like now they're screwed. I don't see it that way. I don't. They have to add, I mean, you got to try and find someone, you know, with an offensive game, no doubt. There's other ways to play it, too. Like, I just, you know, and I understand he took the contract, and as someone reminded me on Twitter, which I knew, and I kind of said, but I might have said, you know, once they did this, you knew this, whatever. But, I mean, he was only allowed to be offered so much money. The Knicks could only offer him so much money because of the limited bird rights. So he was going to go take the bag no matter what happened with the rest of the roster. That is accurate. So, like, I've been prepared for this. Once we heard what the numbers were going to be, we've been prepared for this. And it seemed like when the trade happened with Bridges, it was like, yeah, second best roster in the East. Let's go. And then Hartenstein signs with the Thunder. It's like, damn, we're screwed. I don't see it that way. I really don't. I liked him. I loved him. He was great. And his ability to shoot, his ability to pass the ball, his ability to still rebound, maybe not the same as Mitchell Robinson, but he could rebound, he could pass, they could play that inside-out game. Like, no doubt, I loved him. And they're going to have to find a way to replace him on some level and get another big in there, but they could also do things differently. I mean, you could see, I mean, I think Anunoby is probably skilled enough defensively to play the five at times, right? I think Randall could provide offensive mismatches at the five at times. They could go small. The only fear is Mitchell Robinson gets hurt. So you're going to have capable backup because at any moment he can go down. And that's what scares me about him and Anunoby. That's what scares me about those two guys on the roster at the same time, both being playoff. Both being starters and prone to injuries. I'm watching too much of this. Tanyan Sturts, it's about to happen, people. The moment is coming. Jeter is going to go into the stands. He's going to come out with a bruised face. Alex Rodriguez is going to put his hands up in the air. We've all seen it before. You know what? Here's a hot take. I don't know if I've ever said this on the radio. Here's a hot take about Derek Jeter and the New York Yankees. Obviously, as this yesterday was the anniversary, the 20th anniversary of the diving into the stands game, as I'm watching it right now with Tanyan Sturts, one of the names of relievers who nobody remembers this because Joe Torre won so much, but I'm pretty sure that Clay Holmes's arm would have already fallen off if Joe Torre was the manager of the New York Yankees right now. He went to Tanyan Sturts every game. Scott Proctor is somewhere right now dragging his hands across the ground because his arm is completely off. And Tanyan Sturts was a guy who was in every game. He would, you think they wouldn't, you know, 3 days in a row can't pitch Tanyan Sturts?
Well, they
crazy?
Also all threw 89.
No, I know. Well, that's true, too. Well, they just weren't very good. But, yes, Paul Quantrill is another one. But as we are watching this and Derek Jeter in his moment, let me say this. I have to admit, I've watched the play a million times. A million. I think there is a chance that Giambi, his brother, is out at the plate by even a wider margin if Derek Jeter is not there for the flip play. That ball is going right on target. Now, Posada himself has said the ball was offline and I started to go to get the ball. I think he's covering for Derek Jeter. If you watch that play over and over again, Spencer Jones. I got my names are all mismatched at 1:40 in the morning. Wake up! Shane Spencer throws that ball over Tino's head, over everybody. That ball is bouncing right to home plate. I think it is right on target. And I think there is a less of a close play at the plate if Derek Jeter never touches the ball. I think the flip play, while a terrific play from Derek Jeter, and while I don't know what the hell he's doing there. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing that he had the instinct to be there. I am not taking away from Derek Jeter, but I've watched the play a bunch. I think he's out even if Derek Jeter's not there. That ball looks to me to be going right to home plate. And Jeter catching it, turning, flipping, probably slows the whole thing down. I think the flip play is a little overrated because he's probably out anyway. But it's an amazing play. It's an amazing intuition. It speaks to who Jeter was as much as any play of his career. And more than the jump throw, which is just physically, you know, which is just a physical gift, which he clearly had. Or the running into the stands. I mean, his ability to, you know, never give up and willing to risk his body, sure. That takes a lot. But the instinct to be at the right place at the right time is the essence of Derek Jeter. And so that play might encapsulate him as much as any. So I'm not diminishing the play. What I'm saying is watching it, I think he's out anyway.
So, okay, you might be right because it looks like it's going way wide, but it hits the lip of the grass. I'm watching it now. Mm-hmm. The grass and the first baseline. It hits the outside lip of the grass of the first baseline and takes a weird bounce off of that. So maybe for that reason, it would have bounced back towards the plate.
I'm going to watch it again right now, but I know let me get this big screen out of the way. I've seen it a bunch. And
I mean, yes, we've all seen it a million times.
That's what I'm saying. No, but one day I remember just watching it over and over again because it jumped out at me. And then I started watching it again. It is, in my mind, he's going to be out anyway. He's going to be out anyway. It's actually an incredible throw from Shane Spencer. He got a lot on it. That ball is coming home to get Giambi at the plate anyway. But Terrence Long, yep, rips one down the line. Let me watch it one more time. Since we're on the anniversary of the Derek Jeter running into the stands play. Yeah. Now, Posada does go to move up the line a little bit.
But look at that second angle. You clearly see it.
I think he gets the ball up the line and is able to tag Giambi. I think it's going to be there anyway. I really do. That ball's bouncing right there. It's going to be right there. Unless it doesn't have enough steam. I think that as far as online, I think it's online. There's a chance that I'm not able to tell the level of steam behind it and whether it's going to just like take like 10 bounces to get to Posada. But I don't think so. I would love to see that. You know, there's like moments, like I would just love to like be able to like just Jeter, just stay by second base. Let's see what happens anyway. Because I'm telling you, I think he's out anyway. Ray in Brooklyn, what's going on, Ray? You're on the Fan.
See, Mac, my guy. Listen, I'm the guy who always defends you with Brian Cashman, and I gotta defend you. And I gotta defend you here. Oh my God, you know, me and my brother, who are both huge Yankee fans, we're arguing a debate. It's not even a debate, see, Mac. You're 1,000% right. That ball had enough steam. It was online. He would have been out by 10 feet. And it's Jason Giambi, by the way,
Jeremy Giambi, or
Jeremy, even worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close, bro. That to me, and you know, look, I'm a huge Yankee fan. I only usually call when it's like baseball season. Listen, my guy, 1,000% correct. It is the most overrated play in the history of sports. And well, I know you're trying to be kind.
No, I'm not trying to be kind because I think I don't agree with that statement. It is an incredible play that just to be there and to have that instinct. I happen to agree with you that I don't know if it's necessary. I think
he's going to be a great play.
Well, because of the intuition to be there, I don't know for sure he's going to be out. He might have been safe. I mean, I think watching it, I think he's going to be out anyway, but I don't know
Absolutely.
I don't know
no
for
question.
Sure. What I do know for sure is he was there, made the play, and he was out. and nobody knows to be there. Nobody knows he's supposed to be the cutoff man to be there. Like, no other shortstop is there. That's what makes it great. What makes it special is that Derek Jeter is the only shortstop in baseball. He's not the only shortstop in baseball who can make the jump throw. He's not the only shortstop in baseball who can, you know, go back on a ball and make the catch over his shoulder the way Derek Jeter did. He's not the only guy that could run into the stands. He's the only shortstop in baseball that would have been there for that moment. He's not the most physically gifted, but he's the only one who would have been there in that moment. Yeah, that's what makes the play special. But I do agree with you. I do agree with you. If Jeter just ended up sitting that one out, I think he's probably out at the plate anyway. And then we call it and then it's the Spencer throw game.
Yeah, the flip play. it just irks me because it's like the flip play is going to live forever, and nobody has the balls to say what you and I are saying. And look, I just had to put it.
Well, I don't know how much balls it takes. I'm just telling you, I watch it, I look at it, and in my mind, he's going to be out anyway. He looks like he's going to be out anyway. But that, again, and this isn't me trying to cover up what I've just said. I'm not trying to, like, paint nice flowers around it. Derek Jeter is a savant of baseball to know that's where he should have been, to follow that ball and be there, make the quick pickup, recognizing it is going to go slide offline because there's no doubt Posada does take a step up the line. And I'm not 100% positive like you are. I can't tell you I know for certain that I'd bet my life on it. But I feel like he would have been out anyway. Looking at it, if I had to bet just, you know, $100, I'd bet $100 that he would be out anyway.
And Jeter I just was watching this interview. He said that the right play would have been to throw to third because they had a short out there.
Right.
Whereas it would have been a closer play at the plate.
Right. I mean, watch it again, especially on the expanded view. That ball's got the juice, man. It's getting there. There's no. He might have to be up the line a little bit, but he's going to tag him before he ever gets the home plate. Now, maybe Jeremy sees that and is able to run around. I don't know. I can't. That's why I'm saying, like, I don't know for sure. I wouldn't bet my life on it. Wouldn't bet the mortgage on it. You know, wouldn't bet anything crazy on it. But I feel pretty damn confident that he would have been out anyway. If Jeter never shows up, I'm pretty sure it's just straight to home and it's an out at the plate. Rocco in Saratoga. What's up, Rocco?
How you doing, C-Mac? Yeah, that's tough to call, C-Mac. Different angles. You know optics can play tricks. And you know how they
play over and over again
to get and trying to make the right call. How come they're looking at these plays over and over, 2-3 minutes, and they still can't figure it out?
And sometimes still get it wrong.
C-Mac? Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm. You're right. And the replays, I mean, let's not even get to that side angle. I'm just saying, watching it now, that's got enough juice. He's going to be dead at the plate. He's going to be dead at the plate. I'm telling you.
From that angle. But maybe from Posada's angle, he sees that he would have to step out to get the ball.
Oh, no, he definitely does. There's no doubt about it. The play wouldn't be right at the plate. The play would be up the line a little bit more. But
I
still...
And you think it would have gotten to him in time?
I
do. He would have been able to... Yeah. Okay.
I do. I honestly
do. How fast the ball was traveling.
No, I don't know any of it. That's what I'm saying, Rocco. Right. Rocco, I wouldn't bet your, you know, lovely Saratoga abode on it. There's no doubt about that.
Hell no.
Nor would I bet I wouldn't risk your cachet at every restaurant in Saratoga.
Not on your call.
No, but like
not on your call.
If I had the answers to this, I would be willing to, you know, put a pretty penny down because I'm pretty firm on it.
It's like the call shot, C-Mac, right? Did Ruth really, what was he doing on the call shot, right?
Well, yeah, I mean,
all right?
A little bit.
We'll never know. Because some guys, even some of his teammates says, yep, Ruth was definitely pointing and attest to it. And then some of the Cubs say, no, he was waving at us.
Yeah, he was pointing at
telling
us.
Telling us to sit down, you know, be quiet, because they were razzing him.
But it doesn't matter. Because when the legend becomes myth, you print the legend.
That's right. That's
right.
The greatest set of plays I ever saw at the stadium was not by a Yankee. It was by Bo Jackson, Kansas City, at center field. In one game, he made three spectacular plays, including climbing the wall, including diving out like Superman. I mean, he flew through the air. And then another, and he injured himself on that last one. He injured his ribs. And then that same game, he hit two home runs, and it was only the fifth inning, and then he had to lose the game.
No, I mean,
he might have hit four home runs in that game.
Yeah, no.
He was on. He was lit that night. I don't know what it was. Oh, man, he was the most spectacular day of any play I ever saw. Bo Jackson against the Yanks at the stadium. You remember that, C-Mac?
Of course. I mean, I don't remember it. I wasn't alive for it, I don't believe. And I certainly was, if I was, I was too young. What year could it have been? It was with Dion, so I was definitely alive for it. But I don't remember it. But I've seen the highlights. That was I just watched the Dion documentary. Dion put out a documentary about the time where he played for both the Braves and the Falcons on the same day. Like that was the gist of the documentary, but they gave a bunch of, you know, I'm sorry. While I did watch that documentary, that is not where I saw the Bo Jackson stuff. That was with the 90 Yankee documentary on Peacock, where they went over the 90s, the 1990 Yankee team. And they had that day where it was like kind of Bo Jackson versus Deion Sanders, where they were both obviously these two star athletes, these two sport athletes. And they were playing each other, and Deion actually had the inside the park home run that day, and obviously Bo Jackson put on a show defensively and hit bombs. I mean, I think you could argue. Again, I never saw him in his prime, or at least I don't remember it. I mean, you could argue Bo Jackson's the greatest athlete we've ever seen. I mean, that's how good he was. I mean, watching the highlights of Bo Jackson is scary. It's scary how good he was. And, of course, he's the greatest Super Tecmo Bowl player of all time. There's no doubt about that. I remember, I'll say this, me and Monzo, out in the newsroom, used to have yard contests with Bo Jackson and see how many yards he could run for in a single game of Super Tecmo Bowl. So what you would do is you would call a running play with the other running back on the team, whichever one it was. I guess it was Marcus Allen. I forget what the other running back on the Raiders were. But you would call a running play with the other running back and run him all the way back to the 1 yard line and then run 99 yards with Bo Jackson and walk out of bounds at the 1 yard line for a 99 yard run. Then you would run it back with the other running back all the way back and run again with 99 yards. And you did that a couple times until you got, you know, you'd have to get a couple first downs, then you'd score the touchdown, then you'd do it again. And we would try and get like 1,000 yards in a game. That's how good Bo Jackson was. Every single run, you can get 99 yards. He was incredible. That was by far the most dominant video game player of all time in any sport, in any game, which my kid now, my son Thomas, loves playing the... He's doing home run derby. I got him pissed off today. He likes to do the home run derby on MLB The Show. And he goes through and he gets a lot of the old-time players. And it's funny because now he knows all these old-time players. He's like, Jimmy Fox. So we're doing the home run derby. And I said, all right, let me pick a ballpark. And I picked the Polo Grounds. And if you don't pull the ball down the line, you can't hit home runs. It's like 483 to center field. And so he's furious that he's not hitting home runs at the Polo Grounds in the home run derby. And he's mad at me. Why would you pick this park? This is the stupidest park I've ever seen. And he was all mad at me because I'm like, oh, you got to hit it. You got to pull it down the line. And he's hitting them foul. And he's the ones to center. And he was with Babe Ruth. And Babe Ruth hit one. It had to be 460, 470 to dead center field. And it landed out in the outfield. the things you do to annoy your children, right? I mean, how else do you get through the day?
Did you see the new home run derby rules?
You know what? I was going to mention that. I did see the story. I didn't go through it because I honestly don't care.
I tried to go through it.
Yeah.
It just made no sense.
I know. I have no idea. When we get there, we'll find out. I think I do like the home run derby. And for whatever reason, my wife loves the home run derby. She's a big baseball fan. She's been to more ballparks than I have in a previous life. She'd been to a ton of ballparks throughout the country. And that's how I got all these birds. Like, everybody wonders how what that Nationals bird is up there, and then there's a Baltimore bird, these stuffed animals. I brought them in for one particular FSU Friday.
So your wife's been to Maryland.
Right. Well, she went to Maryland. She went to the Nationals Park. She's been on the other, she went to Pittsburgh. She's been to a lot of the ballparks that I haven't been to. But we had this thing. We were doing FSU Fridays with Carton and Roberts, which stood for, blank stuff up. And we would break things and do things. And it was during the Atlanta Hawks playoff series a couple years ago with the Knicks. And Trae Young was afraid of birds. So we did like this whole thing with birds. And I had these stuffed animals, like this eagle and the Oriole guy. And I went around the office scaring people with the birds to see if they were as scared as Trae Young is of birds. And they got stuck here. And every once in a while, I'll be listening to the morning show or something. They'll be like, what the hell is this stuffed Baltimore Oriole bird? And someone put the national bird up there on the TV. And everyone's like, whose birds are these? And I've not told anybody. This is the first time I'm owning up to the idea that these stuffed animal birds are mine. I brought them here. I was scaring Dave Marinick with it. Okay? Now shut up. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 2 hours down on our 5-hour midnight ride. Only three left. And during the break, Flaherty is going to hit a double down the line to win the game. I'll talk about it when we come back. No, I'm just kidding. 888-808-1019. We'll have a quick break. Marco Belletti, and we'll continue on our program all the way until 5 a.m. The warm-up show, McMonagle here with you on The Fan.